You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the weekend, and thanks for kicking it off with me here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Friday, April 12th, the Rockets are back hard at work today at practice. They're getting ready for Sunday night's Game 1 of the postseason between the Rockets and the Jazz. Round 1 playoff series that is a rematch of the Western Conference semifinals, Round 2, from a year ago when the Rockets dispatched the Utah Jazz in 5 games. This year, Houston is 53-29, tied for the third best record in the West, but they're the 4th seed because the Blazers, who they were tied with at 53 wins, won 2 of the 3 head-to-head meetings and thus had the tiebreaker. The Jazz finished at 50-32. So on today's show, as we begin diving a bit more in-depth into the matchup, I'm going to play back in segments 2 and 3 of our usual 3-part show, a conversation I just wrapped up with David Locke. David, of course, is the radio play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz. However, he also hosts Locked On Jazz, which is, of course, the sister show to Locked On Rockets on this great Locked On Podcast Network. And he also hosts Locked On NBA, which is the national show. So to provide some balance, both myself from a Houston perspective on his program and David from a Utah perspective on mine, we recorded this segment to largely introduce each team to the other's audience. So we're going to get to David in just a few minutes, and I'll play back my conversation about what our keys to the series are, David from a Jazz perspective and me from a Rockets perspective. Here off the top, looking at the numbers a bit more, because we had our Thursday show, we talked a bit about this when we spoke with Rockets guard Bobby Brown, former guard that is, and that was to get a player's perspective on what the game plan is going to be. As for me personally, I had not really done that much in-depth research into the matchup because really until late Wednesday night, there were so many other possibilities. The Thunder, the Clippers, the Spurs, all of those, in addition to the Jazz, seemed very viable round one possibilities for the Rockets right up until the final slate of games on Wednesday and when Denver had that late 15-0 run to finally knock off Minnesota and thus push the Rockets down to the 4th seed, earning them the matchup with the Jazz in round one. And the teams are relatively similar to a year ago when Houston won in 5 games, as stated. However, there's definitely some important differences. And of course, for Rockets' side, it starts with largely replacing Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute with Austin Rivers and Daniel House, which in my opinion, it gives you a higher ceiling, but also a lower floor. You don't have the overall length that you had a year ago and against a Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, Derek Favors-led Jazz squad that has a lot of length and a decent bit of athleticism, while without the same length on the Rockets side as a year ago, if you go cold on offense, then in my opinion, there is a little bit of an easier route for Quinn Snyder to suffocate the Rockets offense and maybe steal a game here or there. The flip side is that because guys like Austin Rivers and Daniel House can do more off the bounce than Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute could in this matchup a year ago, the Rockets may actually have a higher ceiling to where these games don't have to be the slog that some of those were in round two a year ago. And when I think back to that series, the Rockets won game one relatively easily. Game two at home, they actually lost and went back to Utah tied at a game apiece. Game three, the Rockets just crushed them, annihilated them. That was when it was a laugher. They were up by 30-plus for much of the second half. Game four was a slog, and then game five was what I would say was the finest performance of Chris Paul's career, at least in Houston. 40-10, and he was the guy making every big shot down the stretch of the game. James Harden dealing with an illness, or we can also give credit to the Jazz and the way led by Quinn Snyder, how able they are to defend him. They didn't let the Rockets succeed with plan A, but when Chris Paul is your plan B, at least a year ago, that's a really good plan B, and ultimately that's how the Rockets were able to close out the series. This year, there's definitely a lot of similarities, but as mentioned, with a little bit less length and the Jazz still having that same physical big rebounding presence, I would say there's going to be more variance in the Rockets' performances. So in the right combination, I definitely think there's a route for the Jazz to be competitive in this series. My first glance prediction is Rockets in five, although I'm teetering. I might end up going Rockets in six. I think it's hard to see the Jazz having the offense to beat Houston four times out of seven. But at the same time, when you factor in how disciplined they are defensively and the fact that the Rockets, outside of James Harden, have not been as dynamic as a year ago, there's going to be a lot that Chris Paul, now at 33 years old, year 14, still has to prove. I won't say that I'm 100% confident in that prediction. I do think the Rockets, barring injuries, ultimately win the series. In terms of how easy it is, I think we'll start to figure that out once we see these two teams on the hardwood beginning Sunday night with Game 1. And as far as how they match up, I'll play back my conversation with David in just a few moments. For now, what I will say, just looking into the numbers, you look at the fact that the season series between the Rockets and Jazz was split at two games apiece, and the fact that the Jazz, actually, even though they're the 5 seed, they had a higher point differential. I believe it's plus 5.3 to plus 4.8 for the Rockets. There are definitely metrics that you can find that show this as, other than home court, which the Rockets thankfully have, as sort of a coin flip series. However, I don't fully buy into them for a couple of reasons. First off, the Jazz. The first thing that I think about when I hear Utah Jazz is the system. There is so much continuity from year to year. Rubio, Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, they do what they do. And their season, the Jazz, has largely gone according to the schedule. They were fighting throughout the first half of the season just to get to the playoffs. And then down the home stretch of the year, they really piled on the win. That's why up until last week, they actually had a chance to catch the Rockets for a top 4 seed because the schedule really eased up. And where I think Utah really has an advantage in the modern NBA is that their system rarely takes days off. Because they are so disciplined, their effort level, in my opinion, I'm not going to say it's perfect, but it is the closest thing to consistent from night to night that I see amongst good teams in the NBA. A lot of really good teams, like say the Rockets, the Warriors, if it's a random game against say the Atlanta Hawks in March or January, whatever month it is, and it's a sleepy gym, it's only half full in the high dollar seats, you might see their effort not really there on a given night because they believe that, hey, when it matters, we can turn it on. We'll make sure we don't actually lose. The Jazz don't really do that. Now, Donovan Mitchell can be a star. He scored 46 in the win over Denver earlier this week that should have secured the number 2 seed for the Rockets. And at times, he can be breathtaking. Overall, though, he's really not that efficient. His player efficiency rating just over 17 this year. So even though he does have an extra gear, it's not as much as certainly not James Harden. And I would say not even playoff Chris Paul, or at least what previous playoff Chris Paul was. We'll have to see what he has in the tank this year. Generally, though, over 82 games, the reason the Jazz are so daunting is because they rarely take days off. And so when they face a lesser team, they tend to pummel them. You look at their stretch to end the season when the schedule is weak, they had so many 20-plus point wins. And you commend them for that. That takes a ton of discipline, and I respect the organization, the coaching, the leadership. It's a really well-run team. The flip side is that I don't believe they have the same level of upside as a team like the Rockets does. You've heard me say throughout the year, if you listen to me here at Locked On Rockets, that upside wins matter. The Rockets' effort has not always been consistent from game to game, but we have seen them go 3-1 against the Warriors, 3-1 against the Nuggets, 2-0 against the Raptors, 2-0 against the Celtics. They've beaten the Sixers. So many of the good teams, with one exception, Milwaukee, Houston has not only beaten those teams, and many times they've been able to rout them. This can be a really top-shelf Houston team. They have that extra gear. I don't think Utah does. And so to me, when you look at the numbers, you can point to a lot of metrics that say these teams are relatively level. And other than home court, it looks like this could be a series that could go either way. And even if the Rockets do win it, should go 7. In my opinion, those numbers are slightly misleading. That's not meant to be a shot at Utah. It's just a reflection of the fact that they are amongst the most disciplined teams in the entire NBA. I'd put them at the top of the list. And so because of that, they're able to pile on wins and really boost their efficiency as they did late in the season against a lot of lower tier teams. The Rockets have not always had that same focus, and kudos to Quinn Snyder and the Jazz, their leadership for always bringing it. However, in terms of predictive value for the playoffs, I do believe that the Rockets have a higher gear that I don't think the Jazz can get to. So that's why going in, I feel pretty good about the Rockets in this series. If the Rockets come out and execute offensively like they are capable of, I just don't know that the Jazz, with second-year Donovan Mitchell, is really the only consistently above-average creator of his own offense, and not as especially efficient one at that. I just don't know that they have what it takes offensively to beat Houston 4 times out of 7. So that's why I'm largely optimistic on Houston winning the series. However, it's not going to be easy. And beyond just winning the series, considering that Golden State likely looms in round 2, and you have to imagine that the Warriors will have a pretty easy time with the 8th-seeded Clippers and not even have to leave California on their plane flights in between games 1 and 2 and games 3 and 4, it's not only that you want the Rockets to win this series, you want them to win it without even being all that taxed. And the Jazz, their particular style of play, how physical they are, they take away what you want to do first. They are very well organized. They don't make a lot of mistakes. And if you think back to a year ago, some of it may have been that James Harden was sick. But generally speaking, Harden got worse as that series moved along. And I buy that some of it may be related to an illness, but some of it, the Jazz are really well coached and they're well disciplined and they don't make a ton of self-inflicted errors. So it reminds me a little bit of how Oklahoma City has had success defending Houston this year, including the collapse on Tuesday night. Now the difference, I don't think the Jazz have the high-level difference makers offensively the same way that the Thunder have Paul George and Russell Westbrook. However, I do think that defensively, they can pick up James and they can make him really work. And if you think back to that series a year ago, the Rockets, they needed someone to land the plane. That's an analogy I'm borrowing from David Locke, who I'm going to get to in a couple of minutes. When he was calling those games on the Jazz Radio Network, and I do the stats for them from time to time when Utah is in Houston, he talked about the Rockets having not just one, but 2 guys, James Harden and Chris Paul, that are able to land the plane when it's in the final minutes of a close affair in the playoffs, who can get you to the finish line. And both James Harden and Chris Paul, especially playoff CP3, you can trust them to do that. The Jazz, I suppose they're Donovan Mitchell, although back then he was just a rookie. He did play extraordinarily well in that series, so he certainly proved something, and I think he's built upon that this season. Generally speaking, though, the reason the Rockets had the edge, it wasn't just one guy, but it was 2 guys that could do it. And that was important, because as good as James Harden is, upper echelon defenses, and Utah is top 5 year after year, they can take away your plan A. It could also be that even if they don't take him away altogether, perhaps he has to work so hard for his points in the early going, like what we saw in the first half when he put up 26 points on Tuesday in Oklahoma City, but took a beating from Steven Adams, Paul George, so much physical contact both on the perimeter and on his drives inside, that there's a fatigue component as the game moves along. And it's not that it's all on Chris Paul. Certainly Eric Gordon needs to make shots the way he did for most of the season after March 1st until his 3 of 12 clunker in Oklahoma City. Austin Rivers, Daniel House Jr., those are 2 guys that off the bench can make things happen, not just as shooters, but as ball handlers doing some things off the dribble, hitting some mid-range shots. It's not all on CP3, but this is the reason, this is the time of year that you are paying him $40 million per season. This is when Chris Paul needs to execute, and even if he doesn't dominate an entire game, he needs to be dominant in stretches. If James Harden is shaded or the Jazz are committing extra resources to make sure that he doesn't beat them when it matters, then somebody else needs to step up. And Chris Paul, because not only is he a good shooter, but he's also a good creator over the balance of his 14-year NBA career. He's been a fantastic mid-range player. There's a reason why he was the guy that closed out the Jazz a year ago, and my guess is that the Jazz are going to dare him to do that again. I've seen enough from Chris down the stretch of the season. He's gotten a lot better. I think he's feeling pretty good, and this being round 1, I think it also helps. Sunday is game 1. You don't have game 2 until Wednesday. You don't have game 3 until Saturday, so there's a lot of time off in between games. Hopefully that helps keep Chris Paul fresh. The same works for Nene, and perhaps even more since Nene is 36. Getting back to the point, though, I think this is a series where Houston's in good shape to win it, no matter what, barring injury, because I just think that it's hard to see Utah having the offense to win 4 times out of 7. However, you'd like to win it in 4 or 5 games instead of 6 or 7, because of what's looming around the corner in Golden State and the fact that you have to imagine they're going to have a pretty short series with the Clippers. So how do the Rockets make sure it's a short series? My guess is that one of the first two in Houston and perhaps the first one in Utah, it's going to be a tight game that goes down to the wire. Either team can win it. And while James Harden is the reigning MVP of the league, and in my opinion should be again, hopefully that's enough. But against a playoff level elite defense, I don't know that he can do it alone. Someone else is going to have to step up. So to me, as I look at this series, the biggest key from a Houston's perspective, I think they win it regardless, barring injury. But is it an easy series that doesn't tax you too much before the Warriors, or is it something that goes on for a while? To me, the biggest keys are the guys around James Harden. Someone else is going to have to make plays tight in the fourth quarter. They didn't do it enough on Tuesday in Oklahoma City. Hopefully, since they have nearly a week off between that game and when the playoffs start on Sunday night, they'll now have the opportunity to make the adjustments, and the other players around James Harden, most notably Chris Paul, are in position to take advantage once the playoffs start with Game 1 on Sunday evening. And remember, to get this show every day, subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. Now, without any further ado, I'm going to play back my conversation with David Locke, voice of the Utah Jazz, the radio network, and also host of Locked On NBA and Locked On Jazz on this Locked On podcast network. Here's David.
Ben, I think this one's interesting. One, because these are two of the hottest teams in the NBA. Two, because I actually think it's a bad matchup for both teams. The Jazz have had a hard time scoring more than anything else against the Rockets. And if I dig into the numbers, it actually looks like the Rockets, some of their less good games have been against the Jazz.
I could see that. The primary issue for the Rockets this year, now, their defense has gotten better in the final 24 games. But in terms of why they started 11-14, why the 65-win team, really, until the All-Star break, was tracking to be a sub-50, the biggest difference is that they could not rebound the ball. And when you think the Jazz, you look up front, Rudy Gobert, Derek Favors, you think a very big, physical team that rebounds the basketball, doesn't give a ton of second chances. So from the Rockets' perspective, I think they do a good job, going back to the playoffs last year in these games, of limiting Utah's opportunities on offense. The flip side is that where Houston is weakest, which is on the glass, that's a strength of the Utah Jazz. So to me, that's why it's kind of mixed in terms of whether it's a good matchup for Houston or not.
People probably don't use this metric a lot, but to back up Ben's point, when the Rockets get 76% of their defensive rebounds, that's a pretty high number, but they're 25-2. So if you don't punish the Rockets on the defensive glass, you're in trouble. It's interesting because I think a lot of teams' instinct is to run back, get in transition, get set in the half court, not let the Rockets get fast break points, and so they don't go hit the glass. But if the Rockets' defensive rebounding is over 80%, they're 16-0. They're 25-2 when they're over 76%. The story on both these teams, Ben, is this turnaround. From the Jazz standpoint, the turnaround is very schedule-based. The schedule got very soft. They took advantage of it. They did what they were supposed to. And in turn, since January 1st, they're one of the best teams in the league. Since February 1st, both these teams are the best, two of the best teams in the league. The differentials are 1-2 in the league, I believe. What is the story on the Rockets' turnaround?
Largely, I think it's twofold. I think it's, first, James Harden saved the season, because when you look at how they started, and actually one of the low points, they dropped to 11-13. There was a game in Utah, I'm sure you remember, in December, that they got beat by 35. They looked completely uncompetitive, below 500 heading into the 25-game mark. And then shortly after that is when Harden started his 30-point streak, reached 32 games. And even though they ended up losing Chris Paul, Clint Capella during that stretch, they not only stayed afloat, that's when they started their climb. And so to me, from Houston's standpoint, they needed something to save them, and that's what Harden's superhuman stretch did. And then since the All-Star break, that kind of kept them, it stabilized them. And then since the All-Star break, that's when they've gotten healthy again, Chris Paul, Clint Capella. That's when the defense has stabilized, going from really bottom five, bottom 10 most of the year to top five over the final 24, 25 games since the break. And then at that point, that's been the closest thing to last year's Rockets, the 65-win group that we've seen.
This is really a matchup of maybe the two best teams in the NBA since February 1st. The Rockets are the number one offensive team since February 1st, the number five defensive team. The Jazz are the number three offensive team and the number two defensive team after last night behind Orlando. The Rockets are the number one team in differential since February 1st at 9.9, which is an astronomically high number. The Jazz are number two in the league at 9.0. There's nobody else over 8. The Rockets are 24-8. The Jazz are 21-9. And yet, I think most people see it as a mismatch because Houston has clicked in looking like the team they were last year, and Houston whitewashed Jazz in the playoffs last year. Do you see it as a mismatch?
Slightly, but I don't see it as commanding because of the rebounding thing we discussed earlier. I think, to me, that's the one bugaboo that Houston has consistently had that gives them trouble. And I said it after they lost to the Thunder a game Tuesday night that would have given Houston the 2 seed. They had everything to play for. There are still, especially when the matchup is tough, these offensive lulls that Houston can go into. And while I don't think the Jazz are quite as athletic and long overall as the Thunder are, they do share enough of the same characteristics that I'm not going to say that it's just a commanding lead. Generally speaking, I think it's a good matchup for Houston only because, having watched this a lot the last 2 years, I'm just not sure the Jazz have it in them to score enough points. But given what Houston's weaknesses are, it kind of goes back to what you said earlier. It's not an ideal matchup for both teams. And I've seen enough from Utah on the glass and defensively that tells me that while I think Houston probably wins the game or the series, I don't think it's a commanding edge by any means.
It's a bad matchup for the Jazz because the Rockets switch everything, the Jeff Bedzilic defense, and the Jazz are the team that run the most picks, the most handoffs, and if you're running those picks and those handoffs and they're switching everything, it doesn't really do anything, doesn't give you the advantage. Is the Rocket defense, that switching defense that caused the problems last year that Jeff Bedzilic came back to fix, back on switching all the time, or are they playing different styles?
They're primarily still switching. The biggest difference this year is that they're dropping Clint Capela more. Part of the reason, I don't know if he came in heavy or what, but to start the season, the first 20 games, and they got in that horrible start, Capela, and when people think of the Rockets playoff run a year ago, they often think of Capela switching on to even like the Steph Currys of the league and holding his own. He was getting routinely burned. So in an effort to help the rebounding issue and also to mitigate Capela not being quite as quick laterally, they've basically been switching 1 through 4 this year and dropping Capela as the 5 to help with rebounding. Now, that's not 100%. They do at times still have Capela switch, but that's the small distinction. They do still largely do the same things as far as switching. They're just not quite as aggressive with Capella's role in it as they were a year ago.
I think the reason it's not a great matchup for the Rockets, at least statistically, is that the Jazz warp the Rockets' shot chart and force them into more mid-range shots than about anybody does. Obviously, Gobert is able to drop. They deny three-point shots better than any team in the NBA. Is there a script by which people cause the Rockets problems? Is it to let James get his and not involve the others? Is it to double James and force the ball out of his hands? What's your feeling on what is the answer and the biggest, best way people have defended James Harden?
Generally, I think it's to swarm and make other teams beat him. We were talking earlier about the record, which is a bit mixed, about Harden's usage and how well Houston plays when he gets a certain number of touches or shots. And when you look at the chart, you know, you would see kind of the in-between range is when Houston has some of its most struggles. I think it's always misleading that the highest game that Harden had usage-wise when the Rockets won, that was that sort of outlier stretch from December to January, like we were talking about, that Harden was just out of his mind. He's still really good, but he's not that guy. It's not fair to hold him or anyone to that expectation. So generally speaking, if you take out the outlier stretch, the Rockets, they're at their weakest when you stop what they do best, which is James Harden. You put up at least some resistance and you make other guys beat you. In the case of what Houston has now, what's interesting about this matchup, so many of these between the Jazz and the Rockets were early this season. In terms of more predictability besides James Harden, what has helped them a lot throughout the year, although they didn't on Tuesday in OKC, the midseason signings of Austin Rivers and Daniel House, but it's not just like these are shooters. They're also guys who can make plays off the bounce, do some things with the ball in their hand. And that's where, you know, people think Chris Paul in the mid-range. And, of course, that's the big storyline if it's not James Harden. But besides that, Rivers and House, those are two guys that were brought in to sort of help if teams are going to overplay James Harden. And we just haven't seen much of them in the Houston-Utah matchup since so many of them came early in the season.
All right, I've got some geeky notes for you here. You ready for these, Ben? I think they're interesting. They back up a little what you said. Houston's 12 worst offensive games of the year. Now, four of the 12 happened when Carmelo was still on the team. So to some extent, really, those shouldn't count. But just keeping those in for a second, the second worst, fifth worst, and ninth worst were all against the Jazz. One of those with Carmelo. You take out Carmelo, then the single worst outing of the year offensively for the Rockets was on December 6th, and the December 17th game becomes the fifth worst, so the first and the fifth. And where this becomes most interesting to me is when you look at the – so that's on one side. That's the Rockets' offense. The other part that's interesting to me is when you look at the Rockets' defensive approach on things and you look at the Rockets' worst defensive nights in regards to shot quality. Not necessarily shots going in, but the shots they allow, right, for the season. The Jazz are one, the Jazz are five, the Jazz are nine, and the Jazz are 13. So the Jazz had four of the 13 games in which they got the best looks against the Rockets' defense. Now, they didn't make the shots. The Jazz missed a tremendous amount of shots against the Rockets. But to me, that's where the Jazz actually tax the Rockets. They may not have the personnel to do it, but systematically, they tax the Rockets. The big question to me, and I think the final question, where is Chris Paul as a player right now?
A lot better than he was early in the season. But the big question, and it's going to play into the data that you were just saying, is how much can he generate separation, especially in the mid-range game? Because you look at his final numbers, you know, I think he made five of his nine threes, like 24, 8, and 6, that finale against OKC. If you just look at the box score, you would say he's great. And by and large, he was. I'm not trying to talk down on the guy. But generally speaking, what happened is that he basically got hot from three, made a lot of really difficult looks. When the Thunder really put the clamps on in the fourth quarter, and the Rockets talked about their offensive lull earlier, that has been an issue at times, going back to last postseason, they didn't really try to let Chris Paul take over and use the mid-range game. And you could say that, well, you know, Mike D'Antoni's been sick, he wasn't out there, maybe it was just a bad read on the situation. But the thing you wonder, you know, he's 33 years old, it's year 14. Is Chris Paul still capable of generating enough separation consistently to sort of use that mid-range game as an antidote if things are going wrong and you're squeezing the threes, as you mentioned, the shot chart, and you're not letting James Harden take over the game? To me, that's the real question. I wouldn't say that he failed against that, against the Oklahoma City Thunder. I would just say for how hot he was, making all those threes, putting up the numbers, it was surprising to me that Houston did not try it more. And based on the numbers that you threw out, it sounds like, and I would just agree anecdotally through watching the four Rockets-Jazz games this year, that it's probably something that Houston's going to have to do to unlock the Utah Jazz defense.
And I don't know that the Jazz have enough offense to beat the Rockets. That's you made the point earlier. I think that's probably the most accurate point of all, is I'm not convinced that the Jazz have the – and I guess the question is the Rockets' defense, which has been ranked, whatever I said earlier, I think second or third since February 1st, fifth since February 1st. Is it really that good, Ben?
I don't know that it's that good. They've got the benefit of a scheduling stretch, but I think it's legitimately good. I don't know if I'd buy top five, but I would say top 10, yes. They figured a lot of things out. They still don't have the length that they had a year ago. You know, I mentioned Rivers, House. They've gotten a lot more stable in their rotations. They're communicating better. They've made the switches. I don't know that I think it's the same as, you know, Ariza and Bob Mute, that era, just because on top of everything else, they were so long, and that helped them to be not quite as much of a liability on the glass. But I do think they're legitimately top 10, top five, what the metrics are, might be a slight sample size exaggeration, but they're good enough to where I think they're a consistent top 10, assuming they're healthy.
Interesting to last year's series that Dante Exum was so key defensively, Trevor Ariza was so key defensively, and neither are in this series.
Yeah, very interesting. And, you know, there's a clip, by the way, on NBA Twitter, I don't know if you've seen it yet, of Pat Beverly appearing to give Jay Crowder pointers on guarding James Harden. I don't know if that's going to help, but it's a funny clip nonetheless.
I know. I'm just worried about the fact that Jay Crowder is now guarding James Harden when I saw that clip. That's all.
Well, yeah, right. Like, that's what I mean.
That means something went wrong defensively. I don't think Quinn Snyder expects to have James Harden guarding
him. That caught me off guard, too. I just laughed because, you know, you can't hear the words. But, yeah, you could see, if you read the context clues, that that definitely get him some pointers on Harden. But I agree, that's probably not the number one guy for the Jazz to pick up James on a regular basis.
All right, your thoughts or your key item or what's your simple thought for the series that you think is probably the single most important thing?
What version of Chris Paul? It goes back to the last point, because I think the Jazz, they have enough with defense and rebounding to hang around, and they're well-coached enough, they're disciplined enough, to where I think Harden could have a good series. It's not as free-flowing of a series like, say, the Clippers or the Spurs would have been, to where I think you can just have Harden go nuts by his regular season standards. I think it's one where, to unlock the defense, you're going to need to test Chris Paul, and can he do the majority of what he did a season ago? So, you know, I haven't made a final pick yet. I go into it thinking Rockets in five, Rockets in six. But really, I just think that what version of Chris Paul, that's the difference. And can the Jazz, you know, steal one of the first two in Houston and make this a long series? Or, you know, are the Rockets, I don't know that offensively they'll be dominant against the Jazz, but I guess the best way to put it is, can they score enough to where the Jazz and their offensive deficiencies become overwhelming? And to me, it comes down to, after James Harden, who are the guys that step up? And primarily, that's Chris Paul. You can throw, as mentioned, Daniel House, Austin Rivers in there as well. But I think, given his stature, Chris Paul is the guy to watch above all else.
It's an interesting point you bring up. Capella and Gobert both have a similar offensive impact. Harden and Mitchell are not quite the same, but they both have huge usage rates. And it may be a question of whether Chris Paul is superior to, and Chris Paul and or P.J. Tucker or whoever, Austin Rivers, whomever else, is superior to the Joe Ingles, Ricky Rubio, Jay Crowder, whatever group the Jazz. I mean, I think, and it feels as though that should be the case, that those guys are better offensive players. But it's a good point that, to some extent, maybe the big boys and the middle and the stars and with the ball in their hands kind of weigh each other out in those next ones. I'll throw one at you that I think is the key to the series. The last two matchups, which were both losses, interestingly, the Jazz, I'm a big shot distribution guy, broke the Rockets' shot distribution defense. The Jazz took 16 and 18 corner threes in those two games. If they can do that for the series, math is on their side, which is a rarity against the Rockets. What's also interesting is, in the final three games that the Jazz and Rockets played this year, the Jazz shot 12 of 65 on above-the-break threes. 12 of 65.
Wow.
Is that because the Rockets do something in their switching defense where they can test them really well? Or did the Jazz just have really bad shooting nights? And if they do, you know, if they do that, they lose. But if that's just a bad luck shooting nights and they shoot those better, then this series may be closer than people think.
Good stuff there with David Locke. If you want to follow him on Twitter throughout the series or beyond, you can do so at Locked On Sports. So with that, we will break it for this week here at Locked On Rockets. It's been very busy, certainly fleshing out the end of the Rockets season, what began with a record-setting three-point game against the Suns, then the disappointment of blowing the lead and the number two seed in a one-point dagger gut punch of a loss against the Oklahoma City Thunder on Tuesday, and now, of course, getting ready for what begins on Sunday night at home in the friendly confines of Toyota Center, Rockets-Jazz round one, and if Houston is fortunate enough to win that series, it's likely Golden State, the rematch we've been planning on all season long, that's just around the corner in a couple of weeks in round two. If you want more coverage before our next episodes, I'm not planning another one barring breaking news until Monday, when we'll recap Sunday night's late game, the start of the series, game one between the Rockets and the Jazz. The best place to get updates in the interim is on social media. Twitter, you can follow me and the show. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. We've also, however, got a Facebook account at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets and a website, LockedOnRockets.com. All those are ways that you can interact with me. You can access prior content. Also, we've got an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. That's another way that you can interact with me, but you can also ask questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries. If there's anything we can do to improve your experience as a Rockets fan or even as a human being, please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know.
as far as advertising inquiries. We've got some really nice introductory specials and a very large and captive audience during the playoffs. So if you're interested in advertising and we can help out your business, please reach out, because this is a particularly great time of year that we can help you out on that front. As always, I appreciate you guys very much for listening. And in the interim, please remember that you can not only listen, but also subscribe to this show and get all the prior episodes via the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And even when you're in your car or at the gym, you can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets and listen to our most recent episodes that way as well. Once again, for David Locke, who you can follow on Twitter at Locked On Sports, I'm Ben Dubose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. He is the host of Locked On Jazz, which is the sister show to Locked On Rockets on this great Locked On Podcast Network. He's the godfather of it. And of course, he's also the radio voice of the Utah Jazz, so he'll be actively watching and calling this series as it unfolds. I'll try to get more insights from him as the series progresses. For now, thanks to him for joining us. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. And please come back soon for more episodes, including our Game 1 recap at the beginning of next week, right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily discussion of everything Houston Rockets basketball.